You know, I normally come on up when the last song is being sung, but I guess we were going to sing another verse in my mind. It's great to see our young people back. I know they've had a great weekend at their retreat, and we've had a lot of guests on campus this weekend, and we're grateful for that. We have several guests in our audience tonight, and thank you for being a part of our group tonight. We're excited about that. On the 28th, that is next Sunday, we're going to be having a missions emphasis days, and the elders have challenged the young folks in our congregation from the sixth grade down to collect coins. And the coins that you collect, you're going to be able to bring down front during as a part of our offering on that day and our worship to God to give to the work that is in Haiti. And we're trying to raise enough money to sponsor a child that would take about $710, I believe. If we would sponsor a child in food and for 5 days a week for the year, and then for 10 months of school, would take about $750 for the whole year. We're looking forward to our young folks doing that, and grandmas and grandpas. Someone told me the other day that one of the young folks asked him if you could give bills instead of coins. Of course you can't. And the larger the bill, the better would be. That would make lots of coins. It doesn't rattle quite as well, but it sure does feed better. And it is very helpful in educating the young folks in Haiti. There's no public education in Haiti. Every child that's educated is educated in a private setting. And so it takes money to do that. And we're trying to help with the nutrition program that Roberta Edwards, that many of you are aware of and know her. She has 120 people about that she feeds 5 days a week, every week for the whole year. And we're looking forward to her work really growing. She says she has a waiting list of about 300 people. And so we're looking forward to that growing if it is a possible thing. And we're thankful for our young people. We're thankful for the challenge from our elders. They agree to match whatever the children bring. And we're looking forward to a good offering in that regard. I was reading the other day, and I read this story that most of you have heard before about in the 50s, the major discipline problems in schools. This list says they were cigarette smoking, skipping class, running in the halls, spitballs, chewing gum, and whispering in class. And then there's a list of the major problems in our school systems today. It says the major problems are deadly weapons, kids carrying guns, knives, and even assault weapons. And this is followed by arson, drugs, vandalism, and drunkenness. And then it says recently in a Florida high school, a teacher observed a number of boys in the corner of the gymnasium. They were on their hands and knees, and she came running up to them to see what was going on, and she demanded to know what they were doing. And one of the boys looked up and said, "We're shooting dice." And the teacher said, "Thank goodness, I thought you were praying." Supposed to be funny in our culture. When we start thinking about the way life is, there are great challenges, and we face them every day. We see what is going on in our schools, as we've mentioned here, and our young people have choices every day. Choices in terms of friends, choices in terms of behavior, choices in terms of language. They have to decide if they're going to be a part of that group that's going somewhere in life or a part of a group that's just going. And when we start thinking about the challenge for those of us that are older, the challenges are many. We talk and we listen to what is going on in our world, the world of those that are the over-the-hill game kind of people. There are many challenges out there. And when we start thinking about the challenges for those people in the middle that are still in the child-rearing age, that are still working so very hard to develop a lifestyle that is economically sound and spiritually sound, and we just see so many problems that are going on. I was doing daily Bible reading. I am still doing the yearly Bible. I have tried to follow the card to some degree, but I use the the yearly Bible, and every day I read a passage from the Old Testament section, and then a passage from one of the Psalms passage from the book of Proverbs and a New Testament chapter. I try to do that every day. And this week in the daily Bible reading, there was Proverbs chapter 9. And I know that on the card, we're reading through the book of Proverbs. And in this card on Proverbs chapter 9, there is a great message. And the wise man is trying to help us see wisdom calling. If you look at the first three verses of chapter 8, wisdom is personified as a woman, and she calls out to people. The wisdom is trying to call us to follow and to be a part of life that is wise. And yet, when you turn into the chapter 9, you'll see in the first six verses the call of the wise, what it means. And then you go down to verse 13 through 17 in Proverbs chapter 9, and you're going to see what I have entitled the call of the wild. And as we start thinking about that, there are two calls that are out there for every one of us. Doesn't matter what our age is, there are two calls. Just like those young people I was reading about, the different kinds of problems that are going on, they have to decide what they're going to do every day. Every day, all of us, we have to decide what we're going to do, who we are going to be, and whose we are going to be. When you begin to think about these two calls, one way appeals to the mind. Obviously, that's wisdom. When we think through things and we think about the consequences, we think about the result, end result of what's going to happen, we're going to make wiser choices. On the other hand, the other just appeals to the senses. In our culture, it's about what feels good, what seems right. It's about the experience that I have, and if the experience is not good, it cannot be any good whatsoever. One way believes in truth. That, of course, would be wisdom. Wanting to know what absolute truth is and wanting to make application of that truth in our lives. And the other believes that everyone can create their own truth. That's the way our culture is operating. My way is as good as yours. We live in a pluralistic society where if you claim that you are right about anything substantive, you're considered a bigot. And you are not what you ought to be. And you need to be enlightened. And you need to lighten up. And you need to accept what other people have to say, regardless of how ignorant it seems, regardless of how much it violates God's will. You're told you need to turn loose of your dogmatic ways. And you're told that in such a dogmatic way. Isn't that interesting? When we start thinking about one way believing in the truth, the other believing and creating their own truth, one way believes in God's laws, where you look to God. If you want to decide if something is good or bad or right or wrong, you will raise the question that we raised a lot in our culture a few years ago. What would Jesus do? We don't hear that much anymore. We need to hear a lot more of that. And if it takes breaking out those necklaces and bracelets and whatever else we have that raise that question, what would Jesus do? We ought to do that again. Because the way of wisdom is going to seek the truth of God's Word. What does God's Word say to us? That's how we ought to behave. But the other way believes that God's laws are harsh, they are old-fashioned, they're pointless. And that's the way of folly. That's the way of foolishness. That's the way of the wild. In our class where we're trying to look at foundations of faith, we have looked at some statements that are just amazing to me about how hard it is to be faithful to God in our culture in terms of how we believe and what we think and what our standard of behavior ought to be. We truly live in a culture that is becoming more godless. Even though there are many people claiming to believe in God, they are not using God's standard for their behavioral standard. They're not using God's standard for their choices in life. They are choosing their own way and claiming to be God's children, claiming all the while that it doesn't really matter what we believe and how we believe. Let me just share with you three points from the call of the wise tonight. And you can read these in Proverbs chapter 9 in the first six verses. In verse 1, it says, wisdom has built her house. She has hewn out seven pillars. Here is a way with a great foundation. Have you ever been around anybody that always seemed to have what we call a pipe dream, but never fulfilled any of those dreams? Their lives were constantly getting in trouble. They were not succeeding at anything that they claimed that they were going to do. That big job offer out there never came true. That big bunch of money they were going to make never gets made. And they are just building a life with absolutely no foundation. And they're often trying to borrow money from you to meet their dreams, to help their dreams come true. But even if you loan them money, their dreams just do not happen. Their life is being built without foundation. Wisdom calls for us to build our lives upon a solid foundation. In verse 2, the wise man says, "She has slaughtered her meat, she has mixed her wine, she has furnished her table, she has sent, she has furnished her table." Let's stop there. She's prepared a feast. It's a preparation. There is hard work to a great life. People that are not prepared. We have numbers of students in high school and junior high and elementary school and then college that are unprepared. We have many, many people who go to work every day unprepared to work. What they're waiting on is Friday. They're waiting on payday. They're waiting on the weekend, and they're not prepared to put in a great week of work. It takes hard preparation to be wise. It takes hard preparation to succeed the way that God would have us to succeed in our lives. But then there's not just a foundation and preparation, but there's an invitation. She sent out maidens, verse 3 says, and she cries out from the highest places of the city, "Whoever is simple, let him turn in here. And as for him who lacks understanding," she says to him, "come eat of my bread and drink of the wine I have mixed. Forsake foolishness and live, and go in the way of understanding." Here is an offer that is hard to accept, and yet it is the offer of life. Our world is not willing to accept this invitation, and it's open to everyone, even to those of us who are simple. We can understand it. We can recognize it. We can become involved in accepting this invitation. And we can come in, as wisdom says, and eat of the bread and drink of the wine that wisdom has mixed. We can forsake the foolishness that will cost us a great life and maybe even cost us our life physically, but certainly folly and foolishness, the wild way of life, is going to cost us our spiritual life. We can indeed accept the way of understanding and the way of wisdom. So the call of the wise is out there for us. And as we see that, it is open to us. But if you move down to chapter 9 and verse 13 beginning and read through verse 18, you are going to see what I have termed the call of the wild. It's the other side of life. I've been on a few trips to some places. If you go down to Haiti and you go to their street Walmarts where everybody is there, the vendors want you to come. And if you're going to buy some fruit, they want you to come there. And there might be somebody over here wanting to show you a better piece of fruit. Somebody over here wanting to show you a better piece of fruit. And you have no idea if it's which one is the best as you look at just the vendors, but you're just looking at them as an invitation. When you go to any foreign country and there are people who have their wares to sell, they're going to be calling out to you, trying to get you to come. There are people wanting you to come into their shops and they'll be wanting to show you everything. Well, that's the picture we have here, except on one side of the street, if you will, you have wisdom calling out. Very high place can easily be seen and the call can be noticed and heard and understood, but there's always a competing call because on the other side of the street, in a very high place, a very high profile place, the folly is calling out and the wild is calling out. The foolishness is calling out. And here are some characteristics of the call of the wild. First of all, verse 13 says that this person is clamorous. New King James Version says, a foolish woman is clamorous. And you see, this is the personification of foolishness, not talking about a woman versus a man. It's the personification of foolishness, just like the woman is wisdom is being personified. And so foolishness is clamorous. It is loud and in an uproar. And when you hear an invitation that's really loud and in an uproar, and it's going to be harder to understand, it's going to be more difficult to see where the call is leading, you need to be thoughtful. It is undisciplined. If you just look at this whole picture, you're going to see an undisciplined woman. And when you hear an invitation that is like this, you need to look before you follow and make sure you understand where you're going. Who is it that you're going to follow? Where is it that it's going to lead? This loud, boisterous invitation also is full of ignorance. If you take a look at verse 13, this woman knows nothing. She is simple and knows nothing. You see, there's nothing wrong with being simple, but if a person is going to stay that way and is going to build their life on a lack of knowledge, you're going to be in real trouble. This woman, simple and knows nothing. She is ignorant of what is going to make a great life. And then in verse 15, if you take a look at it, you're going to see that this woman is seductive. She is calling to those who pass by, who go straight on their way. Whoever is simple, let him turn in here. And as for him who lacks understanding, here's what she says. You see, here's a woman who is looking to get the person who is not thinking. Here's a woman who is looking to call in and to seduce in a way to get them to follow foolishness when they won't have understanding. They're not just simple. They will not seek understanding. They don't have it and they don't want it. They are not going to get it from this woman who is foolish. And you see, those of you that are trying to be good, how hard is it? How hard is it to say the right thing? How hard is it to do the right thing? I say it often, but we're constantly saying, I know I should not say this, but, or I know I should not do this, but, and then we say and do things we know better than to do. Every day at school, we have to make a choice. Every day at work, we have to make a choice. Every day in our social settings, we have to make a choice. And foolishness is crying out to us, trying to seduce us to make decisions without understanding. To make decisions based on simplicity only, without any knowledge, without any foundation, without any preparation, and without a proper invitation. But this woman, foolishness, is also very secretive. They're going to do things that they don't want anyone else to know about. And she says in verse 17, stolen water is sweet, and bread eaten in secret is pleasant. What an unbelievable thing to enjoy doing things that you don't want anyone to know about. I never was a super bad kid when I was growing up. I just wasn't a super good kid. I just didn't do a lot that I knew I should do. I'd rather play than work. I would rather goof off than be diligent. There were many times in my lifetime when I knew I should have been doing things and I didn't do that. And as I think back about that, I can remember somewhere, I believe, in my 19th year of life, the year I decided to come to Freed Hardeman. And I don't know how closely these coincided, but I believe that is the year in my life where I made an absolute commitment to myself. I failed, obviously, as we do in every commitment. But I made a commitment that I was going to be involved in things that I wouldn't care if any one of you walked up on me. I was going to be doing things that I didn't mind you finding out that I was doing. What a great blessing that has been to my life. If in places I was in Scotland and walked upon a man that I haven't seen since we were classmates and roommates practically up at the White Street dorm in 1965. I ran into him in Scotland. Hadn't seen him in some time. You don't know who you're going to run into. You don't know when you're going to run into somebody. Wouldn't it be a great thing if it really didn't matter ever? If people caught you doing whatever it is you're doing, wouldn't it be a wonderful thing? You see, foolishness wants you to do things and wants you to be involved in things that for young people you don't want your parents to know about, you don't want the teachers to know about, you don't want the employer to know about it. Those of the rest of us, we are saying things likely that we don't want to be repeated. We'll say, now can I tell you a secret and can you keep this to yourself? And then we'll start repeating something we have no business repeating. We want secrecy. Foolishness requires secrecy. And so we cannot do that. But if you look at verse 18, foolishness, that simple person that comes in has no idea about death. He does not know that the dead are there, that her guests are in the depths of hell. You see, you've been invited by this woman to come in and to eat the bread of secrecy and drink the wine. Can you imagine a scene in which you're sitting there and say, could you pass the bread, and you tap the guy on the shoulder to get his attention because he didn't listen to you the first time, and he falls over because he's dead, and everybody around the table with you is dead? You see, because we are involved in foolish things with people that are very much alive, their heart is beating, their blood is flowing through their body, they are breathing air in and out, and they have a physical life, we have no thought sometimes foolishly about how dead people are who are following foolishness. And we began to think in that way. You see, the call of the wild and the call of wisdom are out there every day. The call of wisdom is going to lead us to the call of Jesus. When we begin to think about that, there's a foundation. No other foundation can any man lay than that which is laid, which is Christ Jesus. It's an open invitation if you read the parable of the great banquet, the great feast that we've been invited to. We know that it's a great invitation for every one of us. There's not a person in this room or outside this room that's excluded from this invitation. He sent out into the byways and the highways and seeking people to come to the banquet because those first invited would not come. When you listen to the call of Jesus, there's a room prepared for you. I go and prepare a place for you. In my Father's house, there are many rooms because I've gone to prepare that place for you. You see, there's a prepared room, a prepared place. If you listen to the call of Jesus, that's what Jesus has done and is doing, preparing for you and me to leave this world and come to be with Him. The question is, will we be prepared when He comes? Because there's a promised return. If I go, I will come again and receive you unto myself, that where I am, there you may be also. C.S. Lewis said, when you have to make a choice and you don't make it, that in and of itself is a choice. There's a choice. Wisdom or folly, and there perhaps are people who need to make the choice to turn toward wisdom and away from folly. Thanks be to God that most persons in this room have made the choice to turn to wisdom. But we want everyone to make that choice. John Oxenham, in his poem, put it this way. He said, to every man there opens up a way and ways and a way. And some men climb the highway. Some men grope below. And in between on the misty flats, the rest drift to and fro. And to every man there opens up a highway and a low. And every man must decide which way his soul will go. As we sing this invitation song, there are prayers that are going to be offered. The very words of the song that has been selected are an encouragement to you. And our hope and our prayer is that if you're in this room tonight and you need to be baptized into Christ and you've been taught that and you know that it is the way of wisdom, it is the way of God, that you'll do just that, repenting of your sins and confessing Christ's great name. If there is in this room someone who has chosen the way of wisdom in the past, but you've given up on it and you've taken on the call of the wild, and you've listened to folly, and you've listened to foolishness, and you've forgotten about death, Our hope is that you will remember, that you will return, even now as we stand and as we sing.